This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we're back with another episode of the Brother and Sister Rewatch. I am Kevin, here with my sister Mary. How you doing, Mary Bear?
I'm doing good, Kev. How about you?
I slept well. I had a framboise beer last night, a Belgian, framboise? The lambic beer. It's like juice wine. It's not even...
I'm not a beer drinker. Sad. But if anybody did not see our Twitter post, we've
Which
talked
one?
About... the football picks that our family does.
Yes.
And guess who the winner was this week? Didn't even need to make it to Monday night.
No, yeah,
Mare Bear won.
That atrocious game on Monday night with Andy Dalton, the Cheeto
Yo,
Dick.
The Bucks put up 55 points.
Yeah, okay. that knocked me out of a survival pool that I was in because I was confident that the Rams would bludgeon them at home.
Too bad, so sad.
And the Bucks set a record for themselves. So whatever. Fuck that. All right. So we're here, we're covering The Office, Season 3, Episodes 9 and 10 this week.
Yes, sir.
But before we dive into those, Mare Bear, why don't you tell us what we covered last week?
All right. So last week, we discussed Season 3, Episodes 7 and 8, Branch Closing. Yep. And so that essentially was a switcheroo. Jan told the Scranton Branch they were closing, Michael was going to go without a job, and that the Connecticut Branch, Stamford, where Jim is at, was going to absorb the Scranton Branch. And then, you know, Josh, the douchebag from Stamford, leveraged his new position to get a job at Staples. So everything had to be switcherooed. And it turned out that the Stamford Branch closed and some folks were going to be going to Scranton Branch.
Yeah. So and then, it was an okay episode.
Yeah, no, it was good.
It wasn't great. I think we talked about it wasn't that good, but it was
funny.
Serviceable.
Yeah, it needed to happen, essentially. Yeah. I think this was the one we said was the episode we needed, not the one we wanted.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't high quality.
Yeah. And then episode 8 was the merger. So essentially telling the story of these two branches coming together. Michael is trying to entertain all the new people. He makes them get up on a table. Somebody quits, but Michael gets insulted and he fires them. But this is only after the orientation where he served smoked salmon and champagne and showcased a video called Lazy Scranton.
Yeah.
And it was him and Dwight rapping about all of the great things that the Electric City has to offer.
Yeah, that's a pretty good synopsis. Yeah. They were both like, okay.
Yeah.
Solid enough. I have nothing really to say or add to them. I think we covered it all last week. You can go back and listen if you haven't.
Yeah.
So,
and, I mean, it really closed the Connecticut Branch.
Yeah, that whole
saga.
Thing got wrapped up pretty good, and I couldn't be happier, because that was a fucking drag on this whole series, the whole Stamford-Connecticut stuff.
Season.
Okay, but it's still a young series.
It's still young in the season.
Because, I mean, think about it, we only had one full season. There were 6 episodes in episode 1, and
true.
We're only 8 into season 3, so, I mean, it's barely a season and a half. And
damn it, Daniel.
No,
is that a meme?
Is that a meme? I don't know.
I think...
No, there's Damn It, Michael, from the Warehouse episode.
Damn it, Michael. No, I think there's like a meme that's Damn It, Daniel.
Well, we'll put it up on Twitter.
I don't know,
if we
guys.
Find it.
Tell me if I'm totally out of touch.
Anyway, let's go into season 3, episode 9, The Convict, and you take it away.
All right. So we have a cold open. Hannah, one of our Stamford folks, brought her baby into the office, which that would be awesome if more jobs allowed that. But unfortunately, daycare bills are piling for most. I'm so sorry about that. But anyway, she's, like, the baby's dressed in, like, a pink jacket. And Pam is like, oh my god, she's so cute. And Hannah got really insulted because it's a boy.
Yeah.
And his favorite color is pink.
I don't know how you tell a child's favorite color, especially at that young age.
You don't.
Okay.
She's just being a...
One of those moms?
Yeah.
All right. No, just go ahead. You're going to say something you...
Pretentious?
You're going to say something you regret.
I was going to say pretentious.
Okay.
For the third time, Kevin finally let me get the word out.
I thought you were going to take another direction with that, to be honest.
No.
All right.
I was trying to think of a smart word, Kevin. An SAT word. So anyway, Stanley walks by and he's...
What does he say? I couldn't get it.
He's just like, oh, Lord.
Oh, it's just one of those.
And he, like, kind of rolled his eyes. Yeah, it was nothing, like, too crazy, but you could tell that he was annoyed by the fact that she brought her kid in.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just something else that's going to distract from his crossword time. And then Michael comes in, And he's like, oh my God, may I? And Hannah's like, yeah, of course. She goes to hand him the baby. And in a really awkward twist, he sits under her desk.
Yeah.
And starts...
crunches himself up.
Yeah, and is like, Mommy, Mommy, I'm a baby.
Yeah, he like to do Look Who's Talking
kind of thing. Yeah, and then he ends it with, I'm hungry. Where does milk come from? And then it just goes, breast. And that's the cold open.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a really awkward
It took a left
take.
Turn.
Yeah. But, I mean, it was funny, but also, like, totally cringy, annoying Michael at the same time.
Yeah.
So then we see Jim and Karen at the printer copier mm-hmm. together. And they're kind of just, like, jabbing each other, like,
oh, you almost poking. Done?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Jim says, yes, him and Karen are seeing each other. Mm-hmm. It's new, so they want to keep it kind of on the down low. But they're out in the open flirting like this, and Pam is literally
Pam
3 feet from the copier. Like, literally 3 feet from the copier.
She knows. Yeah. She's not stupid.
Exactly. So then we go in, and we have Pam, Kevin, Angela, and Michael in the conference room on the phone with Jan. And Angela explains to Jan that they received a rebate from the Federal Work Opportunity Program. And nobody knows what the hell it is. Mm. Jan explains that it's
for hiring an ex-con, the
company gets paid for hiring an ex-convict.
I didn't know a program like that existed.
Neither did I.
I don't think something like that should, to be honest. Like, you're basically bribing people to hire people with government money. Right?
Yeah, essentially.
Essentially? Am I wrong? Like,
yeah, but at the same time, once somebody's in jail, even if it is, like, for a minor crime or a white-collar crime...
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
You know, it is difficult for somebody to get... Like, jail is supposed to be for rehabilitation, for them to learn their lesson, but then they get out and they can't get a job anywhere.
Oh, you don't have to tell me all about... The criminal justice system is fucked up, I know.
I totally understand why a program like that would exist.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine that they would be making, like, getting paid a lot of money to do
this. But I think bringing up something like this, it also serves as a great kind of bottom line for this episode. Because it's kind of a topic where people would have disagreements about.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a great,
controversial.
Which is basically the base of this episode. And it starts off by kind of a line of division for how people would see the episode.
For sure.
Which is actually pretty smart. And
yeah.
I appreciate it.
And we're going to get to that line of division. Yeah. So after Jan says, you know, hiring an ex-convict, Michael's like, well, I've never hired a convict. Unless you count Toby, convicted rapist.
That was hilarious. That was so funny.
And everybody kind of just looks at each other, and Jan is just silent, but it's almost like you could hear her annoyance through the phone. Yeah.
Convicted rapist. That line totally killed me.
Right?
It was so great.
So then Jan says, you know, well, if it's not somebody from Scranton, then Josh must have been taking advantage of it, which is really smart.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she, like, lays that out there for her to be like, Michael, maybe you should fucking make some
money.
Yeah,
because it's good for the bottom line of the business. Yeah.
So then all of them are like, yeah, I mean, it must be Stanford. So then they all go through their guesses, like Hannah, Karen, and then Kevin says Martin.
Mm-hmm.
And now while they're doing this, Jan's like, let me check who it is. I'll email HR, which is totally unprofessional to do on a conference call with three people who are not management.
Yeah.
I mean, Pam, I guess, because she takes notes on the calls, but to have two accountants in there.
Well, I mean, they're the ones doing payroll. They're the ones who had the question to begin with. So.
Yeah, but I mean, to give the name of the person, yeah. I wouldn't think would be professional.
No, that doesn't seem ethical.
Which is out of character for Jan.
Yeah.
So anyway, they're all guessing while Jan's on hold emailing HR. And Michael calls Kevin a racist because Martin's the only black guy from Stanford.
Well, yeah, and Michael's quote is, you think he's black, that's why you said that.
Exactly.
And Kevin goes, but he is black.
Yep. So Jan comes back and she goes, oh, all right, it's somebody named Martin Nash. So it is Martin who's the ex-convict.
Mm-hmm.
Now everybody's starting to guess what they did, like what he did to get arrested and spend time in jail. And Michael goes on this, like, speech that says, black people today can get arrested for anything. And it was just kind of like, it was just strange to hear Michael.
Well, because he wanted to say it in a way that he didn't sound racist. Like, but
no,
and he ends it perfectly, too, by saying that we should just ignore it and go on like it's nothing.
Yes,
problem.
Exactly. Because the he's man being an actual like manager.
Yeah, he's like it's none of our business. And he survived in Stanford. Mm-hmm. Stanford. He came here. Nothing's happened. Like he's a nice guy. Mm-hmm. Like he obviously he rehabilitated himself. Like Michael does. Like the right. He
and
says the right
thing. Nobody
was
able to know. Like nobody was able to tell that he was an ex-convict prior to this conversation.
And Michael says
he
the
does.
Right thing.
He says, you know, we should forget about it to avoid any issues. Mm-hmm. And Kevin and Pam are like, yeah, you know what, you're right. Angela, on the other hand. Doesn't feel safe anymore.
No, yeah.
And she says something like, oh, yeah, as a 90-pound woman who works in an ill-lit area of the office that's rarely visited, I completely agree with that.
All sarcastic.
Michael does not pick up on the sarcasm. So then we're out in the office, and Andy calls Jim, saying, but all he says is, I'm so horny.
Yes.
Which... awkward as fuck. Jesus. Like,
well, he says it breathlessly, too. I'm so horny.
I know. Like, but, I mean, anybody saying that would be weird, but Andy Bernard, of all people, like, just watching him, like, at helm, just watching him do that, I'm like, oh, gross. That's, like, the last person I ever want to hear say, I'm so horny.
No, that's not the last person. It's definitely someone you don't want to hear say. Yeah, I can think of a Gilbert Gottfried. I'm so horny! Like
I just think of Iago.
Yeah, like
Aladdin.
A picture of the parrot in Aladdin saying he's horny.
I'm so horny!
No. What? Or like Tim Curry in Home Alone 2.
I love Tim
I'm
Curry.
So horny, so... Like something like that. There are a lot more weird ways to go with the I'm
I
horny
guess.
Quote.
I guess. So anyway, he's asking Jim to hook him up with somebody in the office.
Yeah.
And he starts just like literally looking around, picking names out of air.
Yeah, he starts
and he's
with...
like, what about Kelly? And Jim explains that she's dating Ryan, and Andy's like, and I care because...
He's horny. He's not thinking, man.
Yeah, he doesn't give a shit. And he goes, she's high maintenance. So Andy goes, next. He goes, Angela walks by, and he, like, mouths the name mm-hmm. Angela, because they're, again, 15 feet away
looking
from
at
each
other on the phone.
Yeah. And I really like this line from Jim, though. And Andy goes, you know, blondes do have more fun. And Jim's like, trust me, that will be fun for no one. Like, he knows already, like, oh, yeah. You don't want to go there, dude. Then he goes, what about Pam? And Jim is, like, almost hesitant for a second.
Mm-hmm.
And then he realizes, yes,
he can
I'm
prank
going
her.
To prank her yeah. so hard.
He wants to,
He wants to prank her really
prank
hard.
Prank her hard, yes.
Prank her hard. We're just going to keep saying that line, guys. So anyway, we go over, and for whatever reason, Michael goes back on what he so intelligently said, let's mm-hmm. just forget about this, and he's telling Dwight about Martin.
And Dwight freaks out. Dwight wants
Dwight,
to go fight
like,
him.
Dwight goes to run after him, yeah. And Michael like grabs him by the shoulder and calms him down. So then Dwight is, obviously, he says he's concerned. I do not care if the convict is white, black, Asian, German, or some kind of havesy. I don't like... people who, like, break the law, essentially. Which I love how he goes from white and black, then to specific heritages, I guess?
Well, no. I mean, he's an Asian, right?
Asian or German.
Well, German, because he's German.
Yeah, but Asian or German would fall under Caucasian, white.
Yeah, I know, but it's not meant to be serious.
Or
it's
some
Dwight
kind
Schrute.
Of havesy.
Yeah, havesy's kind of racist. Right? But, see, the thing is, like, this is pretty much, I think, the end of the whole racial... connotations of Martin,
mm-hmm.
and it goes on to him just being a straight up
convict. Yeah,
which because I feel like they shoehorned the race stuff in, like it wasn't necessary.
Yeah,
it just kind of proved that you know Dwight and Michael are kind of ignorant.
Yeah,
which
oh
we
are
which we
yeah.
already knew.
Yeah,
like I feel like they shoehorned the race stuff in. Like it could have just been like, oh, this guy's a convict, he's dangerous or something like that.
Yeah,
and instead they took like that race tact, which was kind of weird.
Because
they
but
drop
they've
it.
They've done it before
no,
in previous episodes.
But they didn't keep it going. They just
no.
kind of dropped it.
Yeah.
Well, actually, no. There is one more scene where they talk about race.
Yes.
But, yeah. Anyway.
So, anyway, Dwight comes up with a plan. He's going to try to trap Martin into breaking the rules.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dwight goes over to the corner where Martin is sitting and feigns needing to get a binder out of the file stacks. With a wad of ones and fives hanging out of his back pocket.
Yeah, like, they're barely in there. They're,
yeah,
like,
they're
literally, like, waving.
Out.
Yeah,
like, the air conditioning in the office is waving them. So, and Michael is just watching this whole thing. Like, Michael approved of this
yeah.
scenario
Let's
going
see what
on.
He does. Let's see what he does.
Yeah. And, like, Dwight pretends to drop the binder, and he, like,
shoves his ass
back. Yeah, and Martin's just, like, clearly uncomfortable with the whole thing. So we go back, you know, plot line B. Andy and Jim are talking about Pam. Likes, dislikes, and Jim is, like, totally in the pranky mood, but Andy is completely serious about this.
He thinks Jim's serious, too. Jim's telling him everything Pam thinks. Yeah,
and so Jim tells him that she likes frisbee-based sports, which Andy says he started the main frisbee golf club at Cornell. He lives to Frolf.
Is that what it's called?
Frolf.
I didn't get that.
F-R-O-L-F. Frolf.
Oh, frisbee golf.
Yeah, frisbee golf, okay. Essentially. That she likes hunting, the Six Flag commercials with the old man doing the dancing.
I remember those. So weird.
Which Andy then starts singing.
There's a part of me when I was younger, I thought that was Harry Carey. I don't know why, it just did.
Oh, and that she's really into Pig Latin as well. Which are all terrible.
They're
like awful things to say, but Andy totally, you know, takes the bait, hook, line, and sinker. So then Michael announces to the office. He goes over to Martin and he's just like, "Hey man, how's it going? Like settling in?"
Yeah, like he's checking on him.
Yeah. And then he turns around to announce to the whole office that he's an ex-convict. But he declares that he trusts him, and that anybody who is an ignorant, dumb person doesn't trust him. Anybody who doesn't trust him, essentially.
And then he ups the ante.
Yep, this is where that race comes back in.
But this is the end of it.
He goes, "For any white man that you say you trust, Michael will name a black man that he trusts more." And he goes, "Pam." And she goes, "I don't know, my dad." And he goes, "Donald Glover." Which, side
note. Not Donald Glover.
Don Glover.
Danny Glover.
Oh, Danny Glover.
Donald Glover is Childish Gambino. Danny Glover is the actor from Angels in the Outfield.
No, I know who Danny Glover is, and I know Donald Glover is his son. But I did not know that.
Okay.
That's his son, but I actually had a really quick tangent want to go off. So I saw Childish Gambino in an interview, and he was talking about how he was like 20 by the time he realized that his name was Don Glover.
Don Glover. That's pretty funny.
So, but I just thought that was really funny. So that must have been what I was thinking of when I wrote Donald Glover.
You're thinking of Don Glover.
Yep. So then Jim says, "Okay, how about Jonas Salk? Do you know who Jonas Salk is?"
Yeah, he created the vaccine for polio.
Exactly. Yeah. Michael goes, "I'm sorry, who?" And so Jim, of course, changes it to Justin Timberlake. So he goes, easy, Colin Powell. And then Karen ups the ante and says, "Jesus," which debatable if he was a white man. And he goes, "Easy, Apollo Creed."
I love that reference.
Is just like, what the fuck?
The Count of Monte Cristo. Yeah.
But you would think that he would say Stanley, at least for one of them. He's standing right in front of him.
Creating a fictional character.
Right? So then everybody's at lunch, and Martin's like, "All right, do you guys want to know what I did to land in jail?" And it turns out it was insider trading.
Yeah, everyone's pretty at ease with it, and they're just talking to him, asking him how prison is.
I mean, it's not a violent crime. Like, he's not selling drugs or anything.
He did what Martha Stewart did.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's it.
That's what I was going to say, actually.
Yeah.
So then Kevin does a quick talking head that he's concerned, and he had Martin explain that to him 3 times because he does that every day, which I find highly unlikely. I think Kevin's just really
Dunder Mifflin's a major company. I'm assuming they're on the stock market, and he takes everything he learns about the different branches.
Oh my God, you're right.
And trades accordingly.
Jesus Christ. So Pam was asking, you know, like, what's prison like? And Martin's explaining it's not terrible. It's kind of boring. You do the same thing every day. But we get two hours of outdoor time. And everybody's, like, harassing Michael, haranguing him. Like, why don't we get outdoors time, Michael?
I don't go outside some days.
Yeah, I don't even go outside.
And, of course, he's taking it personally. He's a bad boss. Work, because he is the boss, work is like a prison. But they're all just kind of busting his balls a little
bit. Yeah. And then Martin kind of digs at Michael. Yeah. Because he's like, "Yeah, my cell was a little bit bigger than Michael's office."
Yeah, it was totally like...
And Michael's just, like, getting more and more upset everything he says. And, but then he says, like, how he took business classes from Harvard graduates and shit like that, which piques Ryan's interest.
Yeah.
And I think that's really what put Michael over the edge, is Ryan's interest in it. So, everybody essentially thinks that prison's better than work in Michael's mind.
Mm-hmm.
Small tangent, though. Small side story. Creed tries to give Hannah's baby a chain of paper clips.
Yeah, yeah. And I think Karen's holding it, and she said, like, oh, if you don't do that, he'll swallow one. Yeah. And Creed says, I have more. It's awesome.
Which is kind of terrifying. Don't ever leave your child with Creed.
He's still, like, hilarious. Like, oh, when it comes to, when it comes to characters and, like, the just success insanity. Of, like, even how little they're on, like, just per capita, the funny they bring, Creed's up there, definitely.
Definitely. So, Andy is going up to Pam, looking to initiate a conversation, and he calls her Pamalama Ding Dong. Wow, that was a mouthful.
Sounded out phonetically.
Right? He's like, he says, you're cute. He asks to take her out on a date. Go out, drive into a field, listen to some country music, throw the frisbee around, smoke some macanados, which I have no idea what those are. And then he finishes with Pig Latin.
Yeah.
Ule something. I couldn't even say it.
I don't care.
She doesn't even get an opportunity to answer. And he's like, hold on, I'll let you think about it and come back to you later. And then Jim turns around and gives Pam, like, this look.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, you motherfucker.
Yeah. She thinks it's so funny.
She does. She thinks it's hilarious. So then Michael feels the need to prove that work is better than prison. He takes everybody outside for 1 hour of outdoor time.
In December.
Mind you, yeah, it's December, people. So it's freezing out. Stanley looked, like, very dapper, though, in his earmuffs,
yeah, the scarf,
his
right?
hat, his scarf. Yeah. Yeah. But he's just like, enough of this. I'm going back inside. It's freezing. Nobody can feel their toes at this point. So they all go back inside. Kevin and Michael are in the break room watching this TV that's, like, super staticky.
It's like something we would have, like, back in the day in elementary school when they'd, wheel the TV into the room and they'd have to fix the antennas and shit. And it was, like, one of those. It was, like, the AV Club TV.
Exactly.
Did you notice who was on the television?
It was WNEP weatherman,
no,
right?
WBRE.
Damn it.
Because The Office is an NBC
show.
Oh,
that's the NBC affiliate.
That's right. And meteorologist Josh Hodel was on there doing the weather. He's still there. He's the chief meteorologist at WBRE.
Oh, that's awesome.
And for those of you who don't know, news stations are a big fucking deal in NEPA.
Oh, yeah.
Like, WNEP is like family to some people here. It's fucking insane. And I think it's, correct me if I'm wrong here, I think it's the number one rated local newscast in the mornings nationwide.
Well, there's only like four of them.
No, nationwide.
Oh, nationwide.
Like, and not like in overall viewers, but by like audience share and shit like that. It's number one nationwide. Hmm. People care for some reason.
Well, they like to know what's going on in the world around them, I guess.
Uh-huh.
So, let's see. Where was I?
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
Karen wants in on the prank.
Hold on. Martin then again tries to one-up Michael by saying the TV in prison is bigger than that one.
Yeah, he's just digging, and it's funny, I don't know,
I can't tell if he's trying to do it purposely.
No, he's cool.
Yeah.
It's like all subtle.
Yeah. So, then...
Okay, you're losing it. What?
I'm sorry. Andy, Jim tells him to play the guitar, but Andy plays the banjo. And to sing in a sexy, high falsetto voice, which, just knowing that Andy does try to sing a lot, I can only imagine. And to add a banjo, I just think of...
I think the banjo is a majestic instrument. And over the years, I've come to love bluegrass music and, like, Earl Scruggs and stuff like that. I'm a big fan of the banjo, believe it or not.
You remind me of Zach from Gilmore Girls.
I'm
bluegrass is just how I get through my day.
Oh, wait, is Zach Lane's husband?
Yeah.
Wait, Vanderberg or something?
Vanderberg, I think.
Ah, fuck. He's cool. I like him.
Yo, dude.
Him and the bassist, like, they live together in Lane.
Yep.
And they're
guys,
kids.
Maybe we should do a survey.
No.
What our next series
should
be.
Oh, God, there'll be another 3 years of Gilmore Girls. Because those are hour-long
shows.
And then
we have the year in review or whatever, year in the life.
Yeah.
That came out on Netflix.
No, I didn't watch that, believe it or not.
Really?
As a fan of the original series, I refuse to go and do... I refuse to do reboots or, like, tack-ons.
Did you hear that The Office might be getting a reboot on
Don't
the
give
NBC
a fuck. I'm not going to fucking watch it.
Streaming.
Nostalgia Nostalgia is the worst thing in America today.
Oh, boy.
It is the fucking worst. And it's like, looking back and enjoying something is one thing, but wanting to constantly relive it, that's another thing entirely. Yeah.
So let's get back
on
track.
Okay, I'm sorry,
it's
guys.
Okay.
As we talk about a show 15 years old.
So, Karen her interest is piqued when she hears Andy say he's going to get his banjo.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Jim explains the prank. She wants in, and she's like, who's the target? And I feel like it's once she talks about Pam as a target.
Well, it seems malicious.
Yeah. Jim, totally backs up. And he's like, you know what? We already sicked Andy on her. Let's give her a break.
He does it very unconvincingly, by the way.
Oh, my God,
he's so bad. You could tell he's just like, well, you joined in now, so I have to change my plan. It's very obvious.
Yeah. It was. It was very, who's the target?
She plays Call of Duty.
Because Karen's not close with Pam.
She's not close with anybody.
No,
just Jim.
Except for Jim. So. Yeah. We really don't know the extent that Karen would carry out a prank on somebody she doesn't even know.
Will we find out?
I don't know. We will find out.
Okay. Go back.
Michael called a conference room meeting.
Okay. Before we start, I want to say this is one I remember. This is one that is a meme all over the internet. So you got memes of this. And it did not disappoint all these years later rewatching
it. No,
it
did not.
It hit so fucking hard. This segment is insanely awesome. Good.
So, Michael says, you all think that prison is better than this place? Fine. Just wait. I have somebody to introduce you to. And he turns around.
Yeah.
And he puts on a purple handkerchief.
Yeah, like a bandana.
Yeah. And he turns around with a really bad New York accent. Apparently everybody from prison is from New York.
I have it here as a mix of Robert De Niro and Joe Pesci. It's kind of like,
that's a good call.
It's kind of like their voices made love and created character.
So he starts talking, I'm Prison Mike.
Prison Mike, ladies and gents. We finally got there.
Yes.
This is awesome.
And Angela calls him out and goes, do you really expect us to call you, to not expect, no, you're Michael?
Yeah.
And he goes, do you really expect me not to slam you up against the wall, biatch? And everybody gets so offended.
Well, Dwight, defends her, Michael.
Whoa, crossing the line. And Michael's like, that's just how we talk in the clink.
Oh, God, the way he, cuts words down, duh, da-dee, ba-dee, it's so great.
He, starts screaming. He's like, I'm here to scare you straight. I can't even do the accent.
I didn't say you straight!
Yeah. And then he looks at Ryan and goes, oh, and you, my friend, you would be the belle of the ball.
Because everybody in prison, somebody's got a bitch.
Yeah, everybody is somebody's bitch in prison. Don't drop the soap. Don't drop the soap. And he goes, kissing.
And of course, Ryan's totally uncomfortable. Cause
oh my God, he's traumatized.
Well, I think part of it is because he knows there's a bit of truth to Michael.
Right?
If you're in prison, you're the one I want. That's so great.
The claim has been laid on Ryan's ass. So then Jim, of course, plays along.
Yep.
And he's like, Prison Mike, what did you get thrown in prison for? And he goes, I robbed and stole. And I robbed some more, and I kidnapped the president's son and held him for ransom. And Jim's like, wow, that's quite the rap sheet, Prison Mike. Never got caught, Nita. Which doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, Jim goes, well, you went to prison. He's like, ah! Typical Michael, just plays it off.
Yep, just makes noises to get out of it.
Yes.
And so they're like, what was the food like? And he goes, gruel, sandwiches. Gruel omelets, just a lot of gruel.
Like Oliver.
Right? That's what I was thinking, too. And so then they go, what's the worst thing about prison, Mike? And he goes, oh, the worst thing about prison was the Dementors. They fly around and suck your soul out.
Okay, I've never really seen Harry Potter, because they reference that this is from Harry Potter.
It is from Harry Potter.
And it sounds like there's just witches flying around.
No, they're the prison guards. They're just like this monster that floats around, and as part of the punishment of the prisoners, they suck tiny pieces of your soul out, and so over so many years, you lose your mind because you don't have a soul anymore. That's what a Dementor is.
That's the icing on the cake. I wish I knew what that was, because I'm listening to it, and I didn't want to Google it. I'm like,
right?
I'll let Mary tell me, because they said Harry Potter, you would know.
So, the Dementors. And they do. They call him out, and they're like, that's from Harry Potter, Prison Mike. And so, Michael's like, Michael leaves. Prison Mike leaves, takes the bandana off, and he's like, I hope you all learned a lesson. And they're all kind of just making fun of him.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of snaps, and he's like, fine, Want to know what prison's really like? And he locks them all in the conference room together.
Total butthurt.
Yeah. He literally does. Everybody's locked inside the conference room, and he's just standing outside. And they're like, Kevin's banging.
Yes.
Banging on the door, yelling, let us out. And Hannah shushes him because she's feeding the baby. And then we see Toby. And Pam calls Toby, and he's like, hey, Pam, where are you calling from? And then we just have Toby go up. He's like, Michael, you have to let them out. They're just making fun of you. You know that, right? This place is obviously better than prison. You know, we get to go home and relax. We get to go. There's birthday parties here. And Michael finally understands that they're teasing him this whole time.
Toby reasoned with him.
Yeah, but I'm shocked because he's a convicted racist or rapist.
Rapist.
And he lets them out and he's like, you know what? As good behavior, you're all getting to go home early.
Trying to cover it up.
Yeah. Right? So essentially, Michael fucked up so bad today that Martin quit.
Yeah, Martin, they show him packing up his box or packing his belongings into a box and heading to the elevator.
It's really sad, too.
Yeah, because the guy was like, everybody seemed to get along with him.
Yeah, he was a good worker, it seemed. He was getting extra money.
He traveled to Scranton to work.
Yeah, he moved with moved for the job.
Yeah.
So then we get a little outgoing scene. Pam is obviously on her way out because she's wearing her full-length coat.
Yeah.
But Andy has cornered her onto the lobby couch, if you want to call it a lobby.
The vestibule.
And he is playing banjo, singing in a high falsetto voice, The Rainbow Connection is the song. And he's singing it to Pam, and Jim smiles at the camera. Pam looks at Jim and just starts smiling, and that's it.
That's it. That is it. That's the episode. So,
I fucking loved this episode.
Oh, this episode is great.
I gave it a 4.8.
I gave it a 4.5. I thought it was awesome. I thought it was hilarious.
Yes.
I mean, you've got an all-time moment in there with the prison mic stuff. Like, you know, we talk about it. We joke about it. We can't really do justice to that segment.
No.
It's incredible. Like, it's so good. And I think it's the best Michael segment we've had.
Yeah.
When I think of all the stuff that Michael Scott's done in these first 20-whatever episodes we've covered.
It's definitely
or 30,
one of them.
Yeah, it's awesome. Like, it's just really good. And like I said, the only thing is, like, the writing, I think, was a little bit unfocused in the beginning where they were focusing on race so much. And then they just dropped it after the Apollo Creed thing. And then
I think it's because Michael realized, like, I need to shut the fuck up about this because I only have... I mean, if you think about the diversity of The Office, everybody is white. And then you have Stanley, Martin, and Kelly as the
and
only diversity.
Oscar.
And Oscar. Sorry, Oscar hasn't been there in a while.
But, I don't know. I just feel like they were taking it one direction, and then they took it in a completely other direction, and the other direction was funnier, actually.
Yeah, the other direction was funnier.
Like, I feel like the racism stuff is stuff we've already seen.
Yeah.
And, like, they kind of mined
it.
Yeah, they mined that well before. I don't think that's a turn of phrase, but like, I think the convict stuff, like the way they did it and the way they played off Michael and that, it was absolutely hilarious.
It was
great shit. And like, you got Toby reasoning with him, like his arch nemesis, the convicted rapist.
I love that line though, unless you mean Toby, the convicted rapist.
And you know what another good thing was? I got really worried 3 seconds into this episode when we see Jim and Karen at the copier.
Yep.
I'm like, oh, fuck, they're going to be the focal point of this episode. Motherfucker.
No, they just touched on it.
It was just that, and then, like, the shit, like, the B storyline with Andy and the, like, it wasn't even just about Jim and Pam. It was, like, Andy was, like, getting fooled and shit. So I liked the subtlety that they're carrying on with that, and I liked the big storyline where Michael made an ass out of himself. And I like this whole idea. It's kind of like, when you watch a movie, let's say like a horror movie, which I'm not a fan of the genre, but you start off with like a group of teenagers at a camp and they get picked off one by one. That's what's happening with the Stanford people.
Yeah, exactly.
And like I can already tell that Hannah is not long for this world, like with the baby and the breast pump and that. Like,
R.I.P. Tony Gardner and Martin Nash.
And like, you know, like it, you just know she's next, especially with her
like
attitude.
Dominoes.
Yeah. So I like that. Like, that's kind of an arching storyline over the season. So. Like, this episode was just really good.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
I mean, anything else you want to touch upon?
No, I think it was... Honestly, I think it was great. you would be the belle of the ball.
Yeah, when he just starts talking about gruel. Gruel! Gruel omelets! Gruel in a bowl!
Do you really expect me not to slam you up against the wall, biatch? And everything. He's so offended. I love it. That whole scene was just perfect.
Oh, yeah. Awesome.
And I wish you understood the Dementors, because it would have made
it even funnier for you. Yeah, it probably would have been the cherry on top.
It really was.
Because you know what I liked also is usually when people come into Mike's world like this, they get flustered. Mm-hmm. Or like Martin was cool as a cucumber the entire time. And like he even said after Mike finished, like, that's not what my
experience was
at all. Like, yeah. I think you got a lot of that from television. It was like so calm about it all.
Oh, Michael, or Jim also says, where did you get this information from? Internet.
Internet.
I thought you were in prison. Boat.
Boat. Yeah, that's right. He says boat. Oh, God, his accent was... Everything about it was awesome, so...
Steve Carell.
Yeah. For that one, sir, you get applause for that one.
You should have won an Emmy for that one.
That was straight cash. So, I guess we're done with that one, and we're going to move on to the next episode, which is episode 10 of season 3, A Benihana Christmas. And before we jump into the intermission, this is a 45-minute episode. And I'm not talking like, oh, they allotted 45 minutes, it's only a half hour. This is 45 full fucking minutes on Netflix.
Yep.
So this, I'm going to try and cut it down. I'm going to try and like cut the fat off this one and just get right to the bone. But we'll do that right after the break, right after this.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth search projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Stop.
And welcome back to the show, everybody. This is the part of the show, the intermission, where we put ourselves over, as well as our partners at PlaceToBeNation.com. And right now we're going to tell you what's going on over at the PTBN Pop Feed. First off, the hard-traveling fanboys continue their long book hunters escapades by reading a Legion of Superhero story called The Great Darkness Saga. And DC For You kicks off a month of DC Comics' best horror offerings with a list of Russell's and Todd's favorite scary DC stories. Plus a look at the Keanu Reeves Constantine film of 2005. Did you watch that?
No, I just saw that on like Hulu or Netflix the other day, and I was this close to watching it.
Yeah, I think it's
now
actually pretty. I think it's pretty decent, actually.
Yeah, I think I heard like when it first came out, people were underwhelmed by it, but then like it's becoming a cult classic. Like people are saying how much better it is than it was given credit.
Because a lot of people hate on stuff that just comes out. Once again, the nostalgia thing I was talking about before.
I love Keanu Reeves.
Well, Keanu, he's like a folk hero.
I love
All right. This week in the NFL, it's Hitch Weekly with Roger and Johnny recapping the last set of games and previewing the upcoming weekend's batch. A brand new show begins on the Pop Feed as siblings Kevin and Mary host the Brother-Sister Rewatch.
Hey-o!
That's right. You're listening to us right now. Ginny and Miranda share a huge announcement on Geek and Sassy number 36 and then reveal the winner of the giveaway contest. On Laugh-In Theater number 12, Andy welcomes David Sunday to live watch So I Married an Axe Murderer, and on Looking Forward, Looking Back, it's the summer movie recap and wager results. Andy is joined by Miranda, Scott, Tim, and Russell to see who won. The greatest song of the 80s tournament continues. We're in the final four. Woo! You can get in on the action on Facebook by searching PTBN's greatest song of the 80s tournament and liking the page. Be sure to weigh in because I think the finals are starting soon.
They were posted yesterday. The final four is Do Not Stop Believing.
And don't Purple... stop. Don't yeah, say Do Not. Oh, God. Purple Rain.
Purple Rain. On Twitter, Don't Stop Believing is winning.
All right.
And then it's also Eye of the Tiger versus Sweet Child of Mine. And unfortunately, Sweet Child of Mine is winning.
I hate to say it. Well, actually, I don't hate to say it because I think it's a great song. I think Eye of the Tiger should win the whole thing.
So do I.
I think
either
that's
that
vintage.
Or Don't Stop Believing. I mean, those are both like iconic.
The only problem I have with that song is that I've been in enough bars at 2 a.m. with a lot of white girl wasted women. You know what I mean? And that song has lost a lot of its luster.
Yes.
But...
it's kind of like one like the meme that says like songs that white people can't not dance or sing
yeah,
to,
yeah, that's
and
it.
That's always the top of the list.
And it should be. Oh, and with the greatest song of the 80s tournament winding down, we will soon be announcing our fall tournament. So stay tuned.
Woo!
I'm actually kind of geeked to see what that's going to be.
Yeah.
Check out a brand new podcast feed brought to you by our very own Jennifer Smith. The Ginny Position can be found on Podbean, iTunes, and your favorite podcatcher app beginning on October 1st. It will be the new home of Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop, Freak Out Drive-In, and lots of fun new content. And guys, I want to give a shout out to Ginny because she actually edits our show for Place to Be Nation.
Yep.
She adds the bumper music. She created the theme song that you hear over there. She's a really, really nice person. And I actually listened to the first show on the Ginny Position feed the other day, and it's a lot of fun. She talks to Todd Weber of Place to Be Nation. Go over and support her. She's a good person.
Mm-hmm.
For the month of October, Place to Be Nation is holding our first annual Halloween movie challenge. We're giving you suggestions on what movies you should watch leading up to All Hallows Eve. And when you do, go on social media and let us know by using the hashtag PTBN Halloween Movie Challenge. But why stop there, Mary?
Why stop there, Kevin?
Every time you watch a scary or silly horror movie or special, let us know and we'll add you to the list. They have a list.
Dude, I'm like obsessed. Okay, I'm currently obsessed with Halloween baking.
Oh my God, challenges. Halloween Wars. Oh yes, I love that shit.
Oh
I live
God.
For Halloween baking.
Thank you,
and
me
the
cook- too.
They have the cookie show too. They
yes, where Halloween the- Bake Off. They have the Halloween Bake Off and then Halloween Wars, which incorporates
pumpkins
cake,
yeah.
and sugar.
There was one a few years ago. They did
both.
There was this guy. They did a hayride thing where people were like making cupcakes for kids, and they were like cutting up pumpkins and making them look like snakes and shit.
Oh my God, I
one. Live for the fall shit.
Yeah,
man.
Same. My husband's been watching Bake Off shows with me for the last 3 days, and he's just like. Like, at first he was just like, this is stupid. And now he's like, oh my God, that guy's cream anglaise is so much better.
Yo, that motherfucker made a horrible compote. When I found out what compote was, I was like, well, I guess it's over being a dude. Like, it's over. Like, me and my girlfriend love watching those shows.
They're so much fun.
They are a lot of fun. And Duff Goldman, the way he eats cake, it's like an entire, like, scoop. And he, like, unhinges his jaw
he
like
does,
a fucking...
He's like a snake.
Yeah, like a boa. And like it's trying to like take a pig down. It's mm-hmm. going. It's fucking gross. But he's a nice. He seems like a cool guy.
He seems like the nicest guy on Food Network.
Yeah,
let's be honest.
He also looks like if Theodore the Chipmunk from Alvin and the Chipmunks was a human, he would be
oh
Duff
my
Goldman.
God.
Like that's what.
Or he's like the human version of the kid from Nightmare Before Christmas, the round faced kid.
Oh, wait, well, who's Oogie Boogie? Isn't that the mayor?
Or am no, I think, Oogie Boogie is the guy that's like a sack filled with bugs.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yes!
Well, it's that... Tis the season, all right? So, over at the PTBN Wrestling feed, on the Place to Be podcast, JT and Scott begin a new decade as Steve Bennett joins them for the 115-90 MSG show. And it was great. They talk about the Warlord. And it's a main event of Jake Roberts versus Ted DiBiase.
Mm.
Childhood heroes of mine. One of them fell very hard into drugs. Anyway, on Wrestling Warzone, it's back with episode number 30 featuring WCW Clash of Champions 32. On the fifth episode of Extreme Three-Way Dance, JT, Jenny, and John dance their way through three episodes of ECW Hardcore TV from March and April of 1994. On the main event, number 134, Scott, Nate, and Steve preview the Wednesday Night War between AEW and NXT, plus New Japan Classic Match Pick. Yeah, that's right. We're recording on Wednesday night. This is, I don't know if you know this, the debut of the new Wednesday Night Wars.
No, I did not.
There's
know
a new
that.
Wrestling company that debuts on TNT tonight.
Huh.
headed by the son of the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, baby.
Jesus Christ.
I'm just saying. He doesn't look like Dusty.
Thank God for that.
Ben Zaney interviews Ian Riccobiani. I hope
I hope I got that.
Plus, butchered that name. Plus Marco and Logan's stunt on episode number 23 of Row 1, Seat 1. And then welcome Impact Wrestling's Ethan Page on a very special episode number 24. Every Wednesday on PlaceToBeNation.com, we've got the most interesting and unexpectedly funny stories on the World Wide Web in Glenn's Weekly Walk. For college football fans, Scott Criscolo and Logan Crossland have their weekly campus hot takes, looking back at the previous week and looking ahead to the biggest matchups. Catch their weekly column every Tuesday afternoon. I've been losing a lot of money on college football bets this year. It's a lot of bullshit. If you're doing online shopping over at Amazon.com, be sure to click on the Amazon banner on the right side of the Place to Be Nation homepage, or use www.placetobenation.com/Amazon, and it takes you right to Amazon and helps out PTBN with no cost to you. Check out our social media pages and message board at www.bigelow34.proboards.com for information on joining our GWWE, PPV, and Match TV Match Ever project. Get in on the conversation today and start researching your list. Whew, I'm going to take a drink. Wow. You put us over.
All right, guys. So, obviously, go and like and share Place Be Nation stuff on Twitter and Facebook. But if you want to contact Kevin and I directly, hit us up on Twitter at Broses Podcast, or send us your emails at brothersisterrewatch@gmail.com. We try to make our Twitter feed really fun and lighthearted. We always jab at each other. At least I jab at Kevin a lot on there.
Yes.
So, you know, come on over and have some fun. Tweet us some of your thoughts and let us know what you think.
It would be greatly appreciated. Mm-hmm. So we did get one email this week.
First time in a while.
A gentleman named Tyler who found us on Place to Be Nation. And he was asking about where he could find our archives.
Awesome.
Because the older shows aren't up on their feed. So you would go to, we are the Brother Sister Rewatch Podcast. You'll find us on Podbean, Anchor, Google Podcast, Spotify, Breaker, or Overcast. Those podcatcher apps. We're trying, you know, we're going to get on iTunes eventually. I think that's something we've been putting off. I don't know why, because we're lazy, I guess. I don't know. Totally. And like Podcast Addict and other apps like that. We're going to try. But he also wrote, I had been under the impression that Kevin was watching for the first time, or was less familiar with the show at any rate, and Mary was a much bigger fan. But the last episode made me think that might not be the case. Maybe if I can track down the archives, I can get a better understanding of the background of the show. I find that having the background of knowing how the characters evolve makes me cut them a bit more slack in the early episodes. For example, Michael is just a dick in season one, but I know he eventually is not just a dick, so I give him a pass and just laugh. Yo, season one, he was horrible,
man.
He was a dick. We remarked on that a lot.
We ripped him apart in season one.
So that's why I was asking about how much you'd watched the series previously. I find it interesting how that will affect your perception and enjoyment of the series on a rewatch. Anyway, I went on longer than I intended, but nice job. I'm enjoying the podcast and keep it up. Thanks, Tyler. Well, thank you for the email, Tyler.
Yes, thank you,
and
Tyler.
I'm going to be honest with you. Yeah, I don't really have a background. I watched the show when it first came on 15 years ago about. And I watched for about the first four seasons, a little bit into season five. And that, just on first run. Like, I never went back and rewatched it or anything like that. So I have barely a frame of reference for anything that happens after, like, Holly Flax shows up.
Oh, wow.
Because I think she shows up at the end of season four. I think I even said, goodbye, Toby. I don't know if there's funnier ones down the line, but that's like the one that sticks with me as like the funniest thing I ever saw on the show.
And for me, The Office on Netflix was essentially the background music to my life for a while there. I can't even tell you how many times I've rewatched it, but I will say this, Tyler, watching it more critically and paying very close attention to all the little nuances does change your perception during a rewatch.
How so? Because we're only a little bit into season three now. How have you changed your
I wouldn't opinion? Say it changes my opinion. It just changes my perception while I'm viewing the episodes.
Oh.
So, like, I still think it's obviously one of the funniest sitcoms I've ever watched.
Okay.
I love the show. I'm always going to be a diehard fan. But taking it apart piece by piece and critically looking at some of the underlying storylines and
how
looking
it's presented,
at the writing,
maybe?
That stuff has changed my perception during the rewatch, and maybe I do come off as a little bit harsher or as not as big of a fan as I am.
Yeah, because you, I mean, for years now, all I like to see on Facebook, you and our middle brother are like sharing memes and stuff that a lot of it I have no frame of reference for. I just like, well, that's obviously from The Office, but I don't know what the fuck it means.
Yeah.
And like, so you guys know deep, like, you know a lot of stuff about it.
And like, my brother, our middle brother Danny and I will literally just quote the show to each other and have a conversation that way. Mm. So we are both huge fans. But again, watching it more critically and trying to break it down for you guys does break it down a little bit differently for me.
And that's the thing is, like, I know in the early, up until maybe the middle of season two, I was like a real bitch.
Yeah, you were.
People probably thought I was a real asshole about the way I was looking at it. But like,
if I heard you bitch about Jim and Pam one more time, I was gonna just stop.
I think I've been vindicated on my thoughts on that. I'm just gonna say. But I haven't, I'll be honest with you, I've enjoyed doing the podcast.
Oh my God,
Enjoy meeting me and my sister just sitting here shooting the shit about a show that we watch and making stupid, lame-ass jokes. A lot of inside jokes that probably a lot of people out there are like, well, that wasn't funny, but it's funny to us. And, you know, stuff like that. But the show itself, like she just said, it's one of the funniest sitcoms. It's enjoyable.
I love it.
I'm not left laughing a lot of times.
We haven't gotten to the crazy yet. Well, you think we've gotten to crazy, but we have not even scratched the surface of crazy. Prison Mike is just the first worm out of a can.
But we are almost halfway through season three. And if a comedy show hasn't hit funny by then.
But like you said, though, the first season was only 6 episodes.
I also want to say that I think it's just, I think a lot of it is, it has the potential. And it doesn't ever... How many times have we said, wow, they went a wrong direction with that one? Or it didn't live up to the potential that it had? Like, I feel like a lot of times, like, they just kind of falter with, like, some of the funny.
They get to the finish line, and then...
Yeah, and they just choke it away. Yeah, and I think that happens far too often for it to be considered great in my eyes. But we still have 6 seasons to go.
But
yeah.
Still watching it from a perspective of just sitting and enjoying it, it's still fucking funny.
It's just too inconsistent. Like, for every Prison Mike, for every Prison Mike episode, we get the merger. And it's like, ugh.
I liked the merger.
Or Initiation, which was just like nothing.
Initiation was funny, but it just didn't have enough.
The Alliance, a shitty episode like that.
Yeah.
Or Office Olympics, where it's just like, oh, they play stupid games all day. Like, but then you'll get Healthcare, or what's the one, sexual assault or what was
sexual harassment?
Sexual harassment.
Cultural Diversity Day.
You get these gems, but you have to slog through like mediocre stuff to get there. I think that's what kills me.
It can't be a laugh a minute every.
No,
you have
no,
to develop the
but
characters.
Don't have
at some
one.
Point.
Don't have one great episode and then 4 mediocre episodes and then 2 great ones and then 3 mediocre.
You have to develop the characters at some point.
Can't you do the same? Can't you do the 2 things at the same time though?
But every time we have a great episode, you always say, I wish they had more character development, or I wish it wasn't all about only this character.
Because
so
their
no,
focus, they,
from
I feel
your
like they can't.
Perspective, no, they can't have your cake and eat it too.
Yes,
Kevin.
I can, because there's been episodes where I said they did it both.
Listen,
they,
Antoinette.
They did this. There's been episodes where they've done both flawlessly, and I've praised them for those. Gay Witch Hunt was definitely one of them.
Oh my God, yes. All right, well, let's jump into this next episode.
Okay.
Episode 10, Benihana Christmas.
Okay.
Kevin, take it away.
Okay, so this one opens with the cold open. Dwight comes in with a dead goose, and he throws it on Pam's desk. And it turns out that he hit it with his car, and he wants to prepare it for everyone to eat.
The wild rice.
Yes.
Stuff.
Oh, yeah. Do they have paprika or whatever? And so, like, Phyllis doesn't think it's crazy. It's already dead. They can eat it.
Well,
but Toby walks
after he said, it's already dead.
Yeah.
It's already dead. So we have to wonder, why is he really pinpointing, like, it's already dead?
And we get there because he tells a story about how one time he wanted to have duck for lunch. So he brought in a live duck that he was going to slaughter. But because it was still alive, they all got attached to it and didn't want him to kill it. So Toby walks in, and Toby's just like, Dwight, what we talked about this. Apparently there's been a situation in the past where they
the
talked
duck.
I guess the duck, yeah. Where
they talked about it for a half
They
hour.
Talked about having dead animals in the office place. And like Dwight is pleading with Toby, like, it's Christmas, please.
Oh my God.
And Toby eventually kind of breaks down and just says, just go clean it up in your car. Get it out of the office. That was great.
That was a good cold open.
So then the show proper opens up with Michael arriving on a bike.
Mm-hmm.
And he puts it. They have a Toys for Tots box, basically.
Yep. Yo, this reminded me of, like, dads Our father used to bike with us every now and again. And, like, the curved handlebars, it's such a 1970s, 80s bicycle.
Yeah, it was like a mountain bike with, like, it looked like ram horns. Yeah. It was like one of those bikes. And he brings it in, he puts it with the toys, and,
he's looking for credit.
Yeah, and Jim is like, that's your old bike. You know, he kind of calls him out for him.
Mike's tires like, are worn, the paint's chipping.
Yeah. So we go to a talking head of Michael, and he's wearing a Dunder Mifflin robe that everybody got in the office.
No, those look swanky as hell. Yeah. I want one.
It looked snug, cozy. And he, in the, you know, the talking head, he says that him and Carol, he got her a Christmas present. Because they're still dating, apparently. That wasn't touched upon after Diwali.
No, yeah, she just kind of left him there and said, we've only had 5 dates. Why are you asking me?
But he holds up 2 tickets to Jamaica and starts thinking, 2 tickets to paradise.
No, you didn't say it that way.
Whoa.
2 tickets to paradise.
That Geico commercial is still the funniest thing. Whoa. He can't even hold that note. Oh, it's so perfect. But, so then Creed arrives and takes a toy. And Jim's like, no, you're supposed to put one there. And he's just like Dickensian. And he's just like, and a happy Christmas to you. He says it like this Irish accent. So Carol arrives. And she goes, and her and Mike go into his office.
She's kind of upset.
Yeah, you can tell like something's wrong. And they get in there and she basically pulls out this Christmas card that Michael sent out. It's her, her kids, and her ex-husband, but Michael's head is photoshopped over
him. Very badly.
Yeah, they're on like a ski trip, and it says skiing's greetings or something, right?
Greetings. Something. Like season's greetings.
Yeah. But like, it's creepy, it's weird,
it's
bizarre, and she breaks up with him. And Michael goes, you walk out that door, it's over. And she says, I know, and just shuts
it. He's like, no, listen, I got tickets to Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go. And she's just like, no. No, Michael.
She just pretty much tells him, like, this is weird. I can't handle this.
Yeah, that's I over. Thought I could, but I just can't. But I do. I love that when he's like, you leave and it's over. She goes, I know. And she just walks out of his life.
It's so weird. So Jim gets called over to Pam's desk, and she gives him his present for Christmas, mm-hmm. which are CIA letters that Pam has been sending to Dwight,
mm-hmm.
you know, telling him, oh, give us your deepest, darkest secrets. We'll send you on a secret mission. And Dwight bit and, like, answered these letters.
So he just wants to be an authority figure so mm-hmm. badly.
And Jim's present is to pick the secret mission for Dwight.
Yep.
And Jim's, like, all excited at first. Then he's like, you know, I shouldn't be doing this. So I just got back here. The promotion.
This pissed me off so fucking much.
Because I'm not the only one who hates Jim.
No, he literally just pranked Dwight in the previous episode.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, it's weak. And then but he does a talking head where he says, this is my chance to start over. And if I just go back to doing those things, what is it all for?
Yeah, that's what pissed me off, though. I'm sorry. He didn't prank Dwight in the last episode. Yeah. He pranked Pam and Andy in the last episode.
But he did the faxing with Dwight last week. Remember?
Yeah. We covered that. But I mean, like, in the immediate episode prior to this, he literally just did it to Pam and Andy. Somebody who knew him as a number two in the Stanford office.
Well, I shouldn't be doing this. Mr. Joe Cool.
Oh, that made me so mad.
I know. So Mike comes out of his office in his robe and announces that Christmas is canceled. And like everybody's
like, excuse me, you can't cancel a Christmas.
And Michael says, Jim, take New Year's away from Stanley. Like he could just cancel holidays. So he says that him and Carol split up and he doesn't want to celebrate. And Dwight chimes in with this great line, are we canceling Hanukkah as well?
Yes!
So, you know, Michael kind of breaks down because everybody wants to have their party. They invited guests and that. And he's like, fine, have your party. And he gets emotional and goes back in his office. So we come back. There's a commercial break. And they come back and Michael's on the floor next to Pam's desk blabbing about, apparently Carol wanted him to do weird sexual stuff.
Apparently.
That's what's alluded to.
Carol's a freak.
Yeah. And Dwight stops by, like, Michael's not on the floor having a crisis.
Right.
And he says, like, we're one bathrobe short. And Michael's only response, take Toby's.
Poor Toby.
So we see Toby in his office. He's like, oh, yeah. He's opening up this bag.
This is a really nice robe.
Yeah. And Dwight just comes, takes the bag. And Toby doesn't even fight back. He just expects that his life is just going to be this miserable. Oh, it's so great. So then, oh man, we go to the party planning committee.
Which, why are they planning the party the same day?
Day of, yeah. And it's in the conference room, and it's Meredith, Pam, Phyllis, Angela, and Karen is there. She's getting her tryout. And Karen's giving ideas that they would do in Stanford.
Yeah.
And Angela shoots them all down and says, it's not working out. I think you should leave. God. And Karen looks to, like, Pam because she's the other, like, young person. Yeah. And Pam, like, refuses to make eye contact, and Karen just leaves.
Fucking wallflower.
So Michael is in his office listening to sad songs. What is the song?
It's James Blunt. I don't know what the song is, but I know it's James Blunt.
It's not that, you're beautiful.
No, you touch my heart, you touch my soul.
Google that. Oh, so he's listening to that song, but it's only the preview on, like, iTunes or whatever. He won't buy it. He'll just listen to the 30 seconds.
Goodbye, my lover.
Okay. So Dwight.
That's the name of the song. Is Goodbye, My Lover.
That dog will hunt.
Goodbye, my lover. Goodbye, my friend.
So Dwight comes in with a box and starts throwing out everything that reminds Michael of Carol. He's like trying to like lift him up, mm-hmm. and then he starts reading the condo papers in Michael's office.
Oh, the closing paperwork. Yeah.
He's like, "Oh, she saved you a bundle. She's a smart cookie." Like almost driving it into Michael. So we go to the break room. Where Kevin's in the fridge, and Toby pats him on the back, but then lingers his hand on it so he could feel the robe that Kevin is wearing. Like, that's the robe.
That's what I had.
It's so creepy.
It's gone now.
Now, Pam goes over to Karen because she wants to be Karen's friend. Karen's never done anything to her. She feels like she's been cold. Yeah. So she's going to, like...
And she has been.
Yeah. So they go over, and she, like, starts talking to her and that, and she wants to be cool, and she kind of shits on Angela. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Which I mean, rightly so. Yeah. Angela's a bully.
And they start getting along, like they giggle and they show Jim's face in the background. He looks scared, which I don't know why he would be.
I think Jim is just feeling weird because his paramour, Karen.
That's something I would say to a brother about his girlfriend.
His ex crush.
Yeah, yeah.
Are now like, tweet, like, da 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 da.
But like, is he afraid, if Pam is such a great friend, she would never say, like, Jim loves me, right?
Well, yeah, I think it's more like he doesn't know if Pam knows that they're together because he hasn't said anything to anybody.
Oh, so Pam... So he's thinking Pam's just being friends with her, but if she finds out that Karen and Jim are together, he's...
Or if Karen...
Why would you date
Jim
somebody at the workplace with the woman you love if you're afraid of getting it out? It's asinine.
I know.
Oh, these are the little nuances of this story that bother me.
We touch on that later, though.
Because it's illogical.
Yes.
Okay. So...
Team up.
Yeah, okay. So they team up. And they pretty much form their own party planning committee.
Yes.
And they put up a flyer over Angela's and Angela and Phyllis. Phyllis is totally, poor like, Phyllis. Held hostage here. And, like, Angela's sniping at Karen and Pam because they're going to have competing parties. Mm-hmm. And... it almost feels like grade school, doesn't it?
Oh,
like,
my
these
God,
people
yeah.
are very petty.
You can't throw a party the same night I'm going to throw a party.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, we touched on last episode about you didn't know how far Karen would take a joke.
Yeah.
This episode, we find out, like, she's willing to, like, slit a bitch's throat.
Yeah, she is.
And because she's, like, going after
she's
Angela.
Hardcore.
She rips down Angela's flyer, which Dwight, I can't even get the name. Pam. Pam finds, she's like,
Pam's just like, yo, this bitch is serious.
So Dwight approaches them and like is like, yo, this is the party planning committee. You're not valid. Like, your party mm-hmm. must give us your materials or whatever.
Until January 4th, you'll be returned.
So then Jim steps up. He goes, well, as ranking number two, I'm going to declare them valid. Mm-hmm. And of course, Dwight's like, can I be on the committee to
permission to join the committee
and
to
Dwight's,
determine validity?
Jim's like, no. And of course, Dwight won't fight. He just goes, damn it, like he had a shot.
And him and Angela are just like, damn it.
It's funny. Now, Andy goes to Mike's office, and he offers Michael lunch to take him out to Benihana.
Which, we don't have one.
There's no Benihana in this
area.
There's
hibachis, but no Benihana.
So, Michael invites, he goes out, he goes, I need to assemble my entourage. So he goes, Dwight, Ryan, Jim, we're going to Asian Hooters.
Oh my God.
But Ryan pulls a bunch of excuses out and...
Like, literally out of his ass.
And Michael's like, oh, okay, see you later. So the other four go. Mm-hmm. Now, this is when Michael does a talking head where he declares bros before hoes, which I think this is something that has caught on culturally, right? It's not because of him. I think it's, it's just perpetuated through the office. But Andy, Jim, and Mike, they get to sit together at the hibachi. And there's a couple that Dwight tries to shoot
him. I'm sorry, but that couple's a douche.
There was one chair to their left. They could have moved over and let Dwight. But Dwight has to sit at the other side of the table. And he can't hear anything. Michael's prattling on about Carol. And the waitress comes over. Her name is Cindy. And because it's a Benihana, she's Asian.
She is.
And what do you know what Andy orders?
An eggnog.
So he just says, a round of Nagasakis.
Oh my god. And you know, I didn't even catch that.
Oh, you didn't catch it because it's eggnog and sake. It's a drink. But he calls them Nagasakis. And the waitress just, her eyes light up like, what the fuck?
Oh my god.
Oh god, it's awesome. So Roy is now in the office and he's helping Pam and Karen set up.
I wouldn't say he's helping them.
He's moving tables and shit. Come on, big, strong, strapping Roy. But, like, he's all, oh my god, he's like a totally different human now.
He is.
He's, like, vulnerable.
He's caring.
Yeah.
Like, where did you get those ribbons? How do you wrap the presents like you do?
Yeah, because he wants to wrap a present for his mom and stuff. Mm-hmm. And
Pam is referencing, like, oh yeah, I'm sure your mom will love if you use the comics for wrapping paper.
Yeah, she's kind of a little, like, talking down to him a bit.
Oh, I saw it as total flirting.
Oh, did you?
If you're using more than 3 pieces of tape, you're doing it wrong. And he's like, what about the comics? Oh, I'm sure your mom would love that. Like, I saw it more so as they were flirting back and forth.
Makes sense, actually. I think I misread that. But Roy leaves.
Then Karen makes a comment.
Yeah, Roy leaves and Karen's like, he's cute. You should date him. Which is I don't think any human being has ever said that sentence before. You should date him. Like, maybe go out. Like,
yeah, maybe you should.
I don't know. Maybe date. Maybe I just use date differently.
The mom comment, like, to me, I thought Karen would have taken that as a red flag of, like, she knows his mother. No,
she's on a mission to fuck with Angela. She's not thinking about other stuff. So we go back to Benihana, and Dwight is discussing knives with the chef. And the chef is, like, outclassing Dwight's knowledge of Japanese swords, I guess.
Not with this mount or whatever.
I forget what the names are because I didn't write them down.
Nagasaki.
No.
Yusoba.
It's not Nagasaki. That is the drink, and that is also the city in Japan.
Oh my god, what is wrong with us today?
Good god.
So many issues
but
today,
the
guys.
Waitress comes back, and Michael makes her laugh. Like, he's just, like, because Andy's, like, trying to lift his spirits up about her and that, or about women. And Michael makes her laugh with a comment, and Andy's like, she's into you, look at that.
God.
And then the onion volcano cheers Michael up on the hibachi.
But the onion volcano only cheers him up because he thinks he made that waitress laugh.
I know, but it's funny to imagine.
But, can we
Andy's
talk
all,
about
Andy's
for
all
a minute, though,
about the onion
the
volcano.
The fact that a waitress who is working for a fucking tip laughed at your joke makes you think she's into you.
It's awesome.
Jesus Christ.
It's pretty much
If I was a bartender, I'd laugh at a lot of jokes, too.
And they do. It's the oldest con in the restaurant biz. But you can tell he's also buzzed.
Oh, yeah, he is.
Pam and Karen come out of their break room, and they announce that the party...
Holding their margaritas.
Yeah, and the party is starting. Angela panics. She runs up. She's making an announcement about paychecks. But she's like, they'll be in the normal amounts on the normal day. Like, she's panicking. And then she runs out, and she calls Dwight. And Dwight pretty much tells her, start the party.
Yep.
So she comes in and announces that her party has started. So you have both sides opening the door to their parties, and nobody's moving, and then Stanley stands up. He just stands up and looks both ways, and then we go to a commercial. So they had to build the drama when it was airing on television. So we come back, and Stanley looks again, and then he saunters to Karen and Pam's.
Yep.
So this kind of opens the floodgate. Like, Kelly and Ryan go to that one.
Yep.
I'm trying to think. Oh, Meredith is going there. And Angela, like, threatens her.
Mm-hmm.
And Meredith, like, they just say to Meredith, we have lots of vodka. So she runs there. So Hannah goes to the Angela's
party.
Kevin goes to Angela's. Kevin also weighs in with a talking head where he weighs the pros and cons of Angela's party. Double fudge brownies. Angela.
He's
like balancing them, and he ends up going to Angela's for the brownies.
But can we just talk about, like, Hannah might be a bigger bitch than Angela.
Oh, is she?
Because she walks in and Angela's like, you will not be disappointed. And Hannah's like, why would I be disappointed?
Yeah, she does. She's like the original RBF.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, she has this bitch face.
But that's what I mean. Like, she might be a bigger bitch than Angela is.
It's so
cool. She's just, like, looking for an argument at this point.
Yeah, like, there's no reason to say
that. No!
Now, we go to a talking head of Angela, where she pretty much shows what a stubborn bitch she is.
Oh, my God, because
she tells a story.
This is great.
She tells a story about her and her sister. They haven't spoken in 16 years.
They used to be best friends.
Yeah, and they haven't spoken in 16 years over a disagreement that she doesn't even remember what it was.
Yes.
And I don't back down. And she smiles. She smiles like, yeah, I won. Meanwhile, like, ugh. Anyway. Back at Benihana, Mike's getting drunk, and he's like, stealing food off that guy's
plate. Oh my god,
plate.
I want steak. And he takes the steak and he's like, family style.
Yeah, and he's doing like a chopstick fight.
Yeah.
So Andy calls over the waitress. He tells her to close her eyes and imagine her dream house. Now, this is like something or whatever. But while they're doing this, Jim tells Dwight that she's asleep. And then Dwight goes, oh, a narcoleptic, of course.
Like, of course.
And when she opens them, Jim's like, oh, she doesn't know how to slaughter a goose. That's what she's saying, Dwight, because Dwight can't hear. Mm-hmm. So then he yells out, he goes, Cindy, you have to hold its head and slit the throat. Like, he's talking about beheading a goose,
yep.
Ripping its innards out and shit, like all the blood everywhere.
Which, again, can we just say, Jim didn't want to pull a fucking prank on Dwight, no, but yet here he is doing it.
He's embarrassing him in front of, like,
strangers,
complete strangers, because that couple on the date between them is just like, ugh, what the fuck? You guys are animals. Yeah. You know? So we go back, Angela's party. It's just Kevin, Hannah, and Phyllis, and it's dead. And the song, what's the song? The Nutcracker Suite?
Yeah.
It's like the Nutcracker ballet music. Yeah, like that music's playing. And they're all just like...
It's a Nutcracker Christmas theme.
Oh, that's right. That was the theme. And they're all just eating brownies. The other party's popping. They got booze.
Yeah, they do.
Karaoke machine's down, but Daryl says it's okay. I'm getting my synthesizer.
Yeah, right? Like, yes. Yo, go Daryl.
Back to Benihana. Mike and Andy invite the waitresses, Cindy and I don't think the other one, we got their name.
We never got a name.
Yeah, they invite them to the party, and they show up.
Yo, those are not the same fucking girls. That's not the one, same girl from the wait. No, Cindy, neither of them are the same from the restaurant.
Cindy doesn't look the same.
No, neither of them are the same female from the restaurant.
They aren't?
No.
Okay.
I looked at this very closely. Because this becomes... I noted it. Girls brought to office are not the ones. The one was the girl that Cindy was talking to.
Okay, but the other one's not. So no. She just like chucked another girl into it.
Yeah.
Because it becomes a big bone of contention in this. Exactly. It becomes the main part of the rest of the episode, to be honest.
But can we talk about inside of Angela's party? How Hannah's trying to crack the nuts in the nutcracker. And she's these nuts are hard to crack. And Angela goes, well, then try harder. And Hannah just, like, picks doesn't up the nutcracker. Break eye contact, picks up the nutcracker, and just slams it on the nut.
Smashes it.
And I'm like, yo, this bitch is not fuck around.
She's kind of tall, too. Like, Amazonian. Mm-hmm. Like, she's, like, 6'3", I feel like. Either that or Angela's super fun-sized.
Oh, Angela's
fun
super
size.
Short. Yeah.
But, so they arrive at the office. And Michael just takes his bike. He's so drunk. He takes the bike that he brought in and gives it to Cindy. And
or
she,
Cindy 2.0.
And she whispers something in his ear and he goes, that's what she said. So Andy and Mike introduce their girlfriends, as they pronounce them, to Angela. And like they all go, you know, they're all like, this is dead. They all go to the break room with Karen and Pam's party.
Because Phyllis says there's another party in the break room.
Mm-hmm. And that party is lit. Like Mike,
yo, the warehouse workers are out there. Everybody,
there's booze, and Mike and Andy are flirting with their dates. Mike confuses them, because like the one talks to Andy, and like the other one comes to him, and he like starts having the conversation that he was having with the other one. He doesn't realize it's a different girl.
Did you forget about what Kevin was singing during karaoke?
I have it right here.
Okay,
because I love how you bring this up. So they're flirting with their dates, and Mike confuses them, and Kevin is singing, you ought to know.
But he puts like 7 U's
in
it.
Yeah, he butchers the fucking end of it.
Want you to know. So, and Daryl's playing a synthesizer.
On the synthesizer. Oh, it's so great.
But did you see Ryan's face when they started singing You Ought to Know? Like when they really got into that. Oh my God. I can't tell if he's drunk or falling asleep because his face is like. I'm gonna get a screenshot and put it on Twitter.
Please do.
And be like,
please do.
Hashtag blasted, like Nutcracker Christmas party.
So, Dwight is now in Angela's party, and he tells her that Benihana sucked, and they hold hands kind of briefly, and then Karen enters with a gift because Dwight won the raffle.
Yes, which was one of Karen's ideas that Angela shut down.
Yeah. And it's walkie talkies, and Dwight is all excited.
Yo, he's pumped.
But Pam sees that Angela's upset, and she kind of calls an end to it, like a truce. So they like go. Her and Karen talk about. It, they go in and they, you know, say to Angela, like, let's merge the parties or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And Angela,
because we've heard great things about your double fudge brownies. Yes.
So then it turns out, like, the karaoke machine wasn't working because Angela stole the power cord.
And hid it in the plant.
Yeah, and she had it. So she gave it back to them.
She's like, oh, does it look like this?
Yeah. So Michael and Andy are at the karaoke machine now. And they're singing Your Body is a Wonderland as a duet to the two girls. Kelly sings Pat Benatar while Ryan guzzles a margarita. There's a lot of stuff going on here. It's like the fast... I like it when it's fast-paced.
Yeah.
So Roy, Kevin, and Michael are in a corner of the office just talking.
Yo.
And Michael points out the girls and says he's with one of those two.
Oh, my
Oh, and then he says, this is my favorite, all waitresses look alike.
Oh, yeah. They're wearing the same, you know how hard it is. I mean, they're wearing the same outfit. I've been drinking, and all waitresses look the same.
Yeah, and Roy and Kevin.
Fucking died.
Roy and Kevin, like, lose their shit laughing. Then Michael does a talking head to try and defend himself, where he talks about how Stevie Wonder wouldn't know what his wife looks like.
Oh, my God.
Classic. Now we go to the break room, and Michael, like, pretends, like, oh, where's my girl? Where's my girl? And she's like, I'm right here, you silly. And he marks her arm with a marker when he comes over to her so he can tell her apart from the other girl.
Oh, my God.
So this is pretty much the home stretch of the episode coming up where Creed is singing and Pam gives Toby a robe and he's all happy.
Oh, but I love the song that Creed is singing.
What is it?
Oh,
you don't know it, do you?
No, I did. I looked it up, but I didn't.
It's 80s. It's 80s, right?
Yes.
But he's singing the hell out of it. I mean, he is a professional musician.
Yeah, I can hear it in my head, and I can't.
He was in one of those late 60s. Was it
the Grassroots?
The Grassroots. Yeah, they had a lot of hits. Actually, I know their songs.
Well, that's. I was like, is it one of their songs?
That would have been meta.
it might be because I think he's been known to do that.
So, but Dwight and Angela are on the walkie-talkies across the office from each other. It's almost like a CB radio, like for truckers.
Yeah.
Possum and Monkey are their nicknames.
My God. Well, he calls her Monkey.
Well, he's Possum, she's Monkey. Mm-hmm. That's like their handles. So Karen gives Jim the same DVD that he got. They got each other the same DVD for Christmas.
Bridget Jones' Diary.
And like they show Pam. Pam looks annoyed. Like, oh. Like it's almost like the moment she realizes, like, oh, look at these two.
Yep.
And so the girls, the Benihana waitresses, leave. And Michael's kind of hurt because he really thought she was his girlfriend.
Yep.
But,
spinning and reeling.
Yeah. And that
was the song.
By...
Oh, God damn it, Kevin, you're killing me.
Don't ruin it. Okay. But Michael offers Cindy the Jamaica tickets. And she goes, nah, I have school.
Right. What the fuck?
And she takes the bike and rides out. It's so awesome. So then we see Dwight singing Lady by Styx, and it's particularly brutal.
Yes, it is, but still love
Jim and Mike are sitting on the couch, and Michael's like kind of getting, I think he's sobering up a little. And they're talking. He tells Jim that he marked her arm up, and they laugh about it. Go ahead. What, you got something to say?
Yeah, the song that Creed sings in karaoke is called Spinning and Reeling, and it's a song off actor and singer Creed Bratton's 2001 album, The 80s.
Oh, so it's his own song. Yeah. That's awesome. Okay, cool.
Sorry, guys. Back to the episode.
So Michael and Jim are on the couch talking. Michael tells Jim he marked her arm up, and they kind of laugh about it. And then like he gets solemn, and he says, why do I feel like crap? And Jim tells him, you just had a rebound.
Yeah.
And Jim goes on to talk about rebounds and how they never make up for the girl who broke your heart, the one that you really love. You know, he's alluding to Pam. And at this moment, I feel so bad for Karen. Like, I can't help but feel just total, like, sadness for this poor woman who's being led along by Jim here. Michael does a talking.
Well, he also says, you know, like, rebounds can be fun, but then you think about the girl you love, the one that broke your heart.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if that's not spelling it out, like,
well,
Karen's
Michael
my
knows.
Rebound.
And Michael knows, that's the thing, but he's
but
drunk,
he's,
so.
But he's also so self-consumed, like...
He's thinking about Carol.
Yeah, he's so self-centered that he's not even picking up on the fact that Jim is just now realizing, oh, fuck, Karen's my rebound.
Who didn't know that? Who wouldn't know that?
Karen.
Well, no, poor woman. Michael does a talking head where he just has to say, Damo arigato, Mr. Scotto.
Yes.
So then Angela is singing The Little Drummer Boy. Dwight is on his knees in front of her, holding up the mic, mouthing the words to her.
So that she can hold her hands in front of her chest.
Like an angel or some fucking thing. And Jim looks over, he sees Pam and Roy exchanging gifts and hugging in the conference room.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets sad. Fuck you, Jim, it's your own fault. I'm
God
so
damn
done. I'm so cooked on this shit. So Michael calls someone in his office and invites them to Jamaica. And they accept. Totally. And he's like, oh, great. Okay, awesome.
this is a great moment, too.
This is awesome. So Angela's singing The Little Drummer Boy, and we see the door to the office open up, and it's Oscar and Gil. And they walk in, they see Angela singing Little Drummer Boy, and they just leave.
He's like, this was a mistake.
He just walks out. Oscar's back, yes! Can't wait. Now, the party's wrapping up, and Jim says goodnight to Pam.
Mm-hmm.
Then he gives Pam Dwight's secret mission. He's gonna do it after all.
bitch.
And he, you know, they're talking about what they should do or whatever, and Jim says, maybe they can send a helicopter.
So then they were going to buy him a bus ticket to go down to Langley.
But it was $75.
Yeah, and they're too cheap.
Yeah, so they said maybe send a helicopter.
Which, isn't Langley FBI, not CIA?
I don't. Quantico is one of them. Don't ask me which one.
Okay.
That's a show. But we close out with Dwight. He's waiting on the rooftop.
With a duffel bag and a bright orange hat.
For the helicopter. And he gets a text that says, you've been compromised. Destroy your phone. So he throws his phone off the roof and walks off.
Which I love that you can hear the phone, like, because
yeah, they mic'd the phone.
It's like a Nextel, like, brick.
Yeah.
And you just hear, like, ting, ting. Like, it didn't break. It obviously didn't break. Mm-hmm.
But that's that episode. That's a Benihana Christmas. Yep. That's a long fucking episode.
It was a long episode.
What did you grade it, by the way?
I gave it a 4.4.
I gave it a 4.
Because I thought it was really funny. Yes. It did have more potential, obviously. But overall, it was still funny. But I mean, how many times they went back and forth to the restaurant?
But that was okay. I actually enjoyed the restaurant stuff.
I felt like they could cut the restaurant stuff down, like, by at least 3 minutes. What would you cut off?
There's only 3 scenes there. There was when they arrived?
The first scene is, like, a 5-minute scene.
When they arrived?
I feel
like... And Dwight can't hear, which sets the, like, the whole goose... That is basically just setting up the goose slaughter punchline, I guess. But
I guess. I felt like it was too much at the restaurant. It annoyed me. Like, the goose part was funny, but I think it was the second time they went back. I was just like...
See, I didn't know. All right. You know what I had a problem with? The length. 45 minutes.
That's what I mean. Like, they could have cut out
yeah.
one of those restaurant scenes and cut it down to at least, like, 40 minutes.
No, because you got to fill TV. If they're going to give you an hour, you got to fill it. But I don't know why you want to take a show like this that... I mean, we just watched The Convict. It was 21 minutes, a sprint. That is when the show is at its best. And when they try to slow things down or elongate episodes...
Yeah, there's a they lot trip up. In this episode.
Yeah, they trip up. And this was one that was... It was funny. It was a good episode. And you, like I said before, they got some of the character stuff. And they got the comedy in on this one. It all fit in. It was. I mean, maybe it all fit in because it was a longer ep. But, like, the length really... I feel like they stretched things out longer than they have to with the length. And one of those things would definitely be the competing parties. You know? Yeah. That seemed like it was something that could have just been, I don't know. I guess the way they paced everything, it had to be 45 minutes.
No, I think
the
parties were fine because it really showed, like, the one party was bumping and then you really saw, like, because, just how bad the other party was.
Because people don't like Angela. It was pretty much just putting
Angela slapping, like, basically slapping Kevin's hand, like, saying, like, no seconds until everybody gets the one. And he's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, because there's three people
there. But
then
when he leaves the party, he takes, like, a handful of fucking fudge brownies. Oh, yeah.
But it's just, I don't know. Like, it was good, but it wasn't great. And, I mean, is there anything in particular you want to talk about? You want to talk about Michael? You want to talk about Jim and Pam?
No, I just feel like the restaurant scene went on. I think it could have gone faster. Like, that feels like it was, like, a 4-hour lunch.
They were getting drunk.
And we know the hibachi does not last 4. Maybe Benihana is.
With our family,
anybody
it does.
Anybody in CA? Yeah, but anybody in California or anybody that has a Benihana, does it take 4 fucking hours to get lunch?
If you're drinking, if you're enjoying yourself like they were.
I guess.
But the thing is, I guess Jim
they
is...
They had their food, like, Jim by the sucks. End of the first scene, though.
Jim sucked.
No, Jim sucked in this episode because he kept on going back and forth. I don't think I should prank. Then he does prank after prank after prank with Dwight.
And then he ends with the prank.
And then he comes back and he's like, gives in to Pam, so, like... I don't know if it's that he felt bad, like, he still wanted to have that connection with Pam because he saw her and Roy getting closer.
Well, that's the thing, is he's got something. Okay, this is a case of the grass is always greener type of thing.
Yeah.
Like, he finally got away from Pam. Pam didn't want him. She said, no, I'm going to marry Roy. He finds somebody who loves him, and he likes him. Likes him, and he likes her, and they're doing their thing. And then he sees Roy hugging Pam again. He's like, I want that.
Yeah.
It's like a guy who just wants what he can't have. Yeah. And in the process...
The worst kind of guy, by the way.
In the process, he's hurting innocent people. Like, this woman who wants to be with him and who likes him. And he's, like, willing to, like, trample on her feelings because he cares more about Pam, who trampled on his feelings. You know what I mean? Like, when I'm watching this in order, like, from beginning to end, like, well, not end, but, like, to where we are now, it's like, okay, you guys, like, joke around together and he listens. Like, is that... Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what to say about it, man. Like, I'm just not...
Hey, you can't deny chemistry, though, dude.
Is there chemistry?
Is there?
I don't know. I don't think there is. I... it's just whatever. It's just Jim being like a morose motherfucker when he can't get Pam. And then like he's hurt her feelings in the past by saying mean things.
Yeah, he has.
He moved away. He didn't communicate with her, even though they were very good friends.
True.
He came back. He started dating another girl, even though Pam was available. Like, everything he's doing is self-sabotaging. Like, I don't know how this is, like, a sympathetic character, I guess, is pretty much the long and short of it.
I guess.
But Michael, I actually felt sympathy for it. Well, no. I take that back. When you see what he did and why she broke up with him...
Oh,
no,
my God.
I had no sympathy. That's a psychopath. That's horrible. But, like... by the end, when you see like how much this guy just wants human contact,
oh yeah,
that's the that's the part where you have sympathy for him. Is that this guy does want he love? Just, he wants friendship. He wants to be. Yeah, he wants people to like him, but he does it in the most ham-fisted, horrible, like socially unacceptable ways. You know.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, I don't know if there's much else to talk about here. You got anything?
No, not really.
Okay. Well, then tell us, what do we have to look forward to next week?
So, next week, now again, I know, Kevin, that you don't really remember all of these episodes very well.
No.
But the next one is going to be fucking phenomenal.
What is it?
Episode 11, Back from Vacation.
No idea.
Oh, you're going to love
speaking of vacations... did we ever talk about, like, what happened to Jim's Australian vacation?
I think he...
Did he ever go to Australia?
No, because he moved to Stanford for the job.
So that, because I was... That was a plot point that I should have nailed on, like, last season.
Yeah.
He never went to fucking Australia.
Nope. And so, episode 11, Back from Vacation. Episode 12, Traveling Salesman.
What? Packer?
I don't know.
Because Packer's the traveling salesman.
He is.
Oh, God.
We'll have to wait and that's find what out this next
Christmas,
week.
That's what this Christmas episode is. Todd F. Packer, God damn it.
We'll have to wait and find out next week. But, okay. Guys, thank you so much for listening. Again, if you want to hit us up on Twitter, it's at BroSisPodcast. Or send us an email. Thank you again to Tyler for sending in your thoughts. We appreciate it, and you guys can send us your feedback at brothersisterrewatch@gmail.com.
Absolutely, and we'll be happy to read it on air. We'll be happy to answer it if you have a question, any concerns, comments, suggestions, whatever you have. If you want us to, if you have any suggestions, let us know. Because, what is this? This is episode 19. Yeah, so we're almost 20 in, so, I mean, you guys have enough of a sample size to tell us if you have any suggestions for the show. If you want us to change anything, or if you think we should do things a certain way, let us know.
Hit us up, guys.
That's right.
All
right,
well, thank you guys so much, and we'll see you next week.
Have a good one.
Bye. He just smiled and gave me a Vegemite sandwich. And he said, I come from a land.